VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
You're listening to The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away. All with our award-winning commentary, opinion, and insights. Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here in Liverpool. We did one of these in Manchester a month ago, and I have to say, you guys have a much, much, much lovelier city, possibly because it was all rebuilt in the last 10 years. So it's a privilege to be here, privilege that you guys chose to spend your evening with us, and I'm very excited for tonight to introduce us my guests. The way it's going to work, he kind of outlined it. If you want to speak, you'll come around. Rory will come around with a microphone. We have some topics, but we'll also have Q&A, and we're happy to go where the discussion guides us. Now, I'd ask you to welcome my guests on here. You'll probably know some of them, possibly all of them. First off, it's my colleague from The Times. He's our man on Merseyside. It's Tony Barrett. Next up, it's a guy who Tony and I have to speak very well of, because he is, after all, our boss. He's also from here. I think he's been to every European Cup final, all of them, bar one, I think, when he was studying. It's Tony Evans. And as you can tell from his shirt, Tony is very much a blue. Actually, he's not really. But this next gentleman is. Please put your hands together for Everton legend, and Peter Reid.
Thank you very much.
All right, now, before we get started, just because we do have some ideas we want to talk about, but I also want to get a sense of who's who in the room. Could I possibly ask the Liverpool fans to raise their hand? All right. Could I ask the Everton fans to raise their hand? Peter?
Mm-hmm. They're all in London, West in the FA Cup.
All right. That might somehow influence the agenda tonight. But want to start with one topic that people have talked about a lot. You have this incredible city, possibly the romantic heart of English football. Certainly, for me, who didn't grow up in this country and viewed it from afar, there was. So for me, growing up in the 80s, there was no question that when you thought of English football, you thought of Merseyside, you thought of Liverpool. But you have a city right now with two stadiums. Most of whom, the bean counters tell us, neither one of these stadiums is necessarily viable. Globalized brands, football, luxury boxes, all that good stuff that we like to talk about. I want to introduce, so people have talked about ground sharing. as a possible solution. There have been all sorts of obstacles. I want to start with you, Tony Barrett, because you're on the ground. You probably covered this issue more than most, both for the Times and probably before that at the Echo as well. Is this still something that's on the horizon, and should it be on the horizon?
It's something that I think the City Council would like to happen. It's something that the City Council have wanted to happen for some time. There is a lot of pressure on Liverpool now with their stadium plans. Liverpool obviously planning to improve and regenerate Anfield, but if the Council had their way, they would put Liverpool and Everton tomorrow in a stadium, and that would be it. That would be the two sharing for eternity. That is the pressure that Liverpool are under. Liverpool are under that pressure for lots of reasons, financial. Also the fact that in the area of Liverpool 4, the whole regeneration process has been held up by their plans, never been realised. So that is where we are. Liverpool are now down to two houses that they need to buy up in order to go ahead with the redevelopment of Anfield. And that should be pretty much a formality. I know there's a bit of haggling going on, but with the CPOs hanging over the owners of those properties, and it is landlords, it's not homeowners, that should go through, and Liverpool are hoping to get a plan application by around April. The problem is that behind the scenes, there are people who may be working on behalf of vested interests, we don't know, who are certainly pushing for a shared stadium. Last week, out of nowhere, Christian Pearslow, who was managing director, well, chief exec, I don't know what is.
The Fernando Torres
of finance. He appeared on national radio where he again raised the subject of a shared stadium, and as if by magic, within 3 hours, his former press officer, Paul Tittle, was also backing the idea of a shared stadium. So
the man who labelled us the Scouse Khmer Rouge.
So that was, these things don't happen by coincidence. That tells you that there's someone somewhere who wants a shared stadium still.
Well, let me tell you something. The ownership are committed to revamping Anfield. They will not share a stadium. That I would say that's 100% certain. There are plenty of people who want it. And there are clearly at Goodison, they'd love to do it. But I'd also say, you got to be careful. If you look at, in the history of sports, right across the globe, not just football, other sports, the team that's perceived to be the second, to be the minor team in a shared stadium, traditionally does worse. You can look at Inter Milan. I mean, we went there and we played there and we beat them. It was very interesting. They give out 30,000 whistles to drown out 3,000 Scousers. They had a banner which said, never relegated. You know, across, you know, when Milan come in there, you know, they've won European Cups. I mean, Inter have as well, but like they feel themselves. You look at American football, the New York Jets compared to New York Giants. The New York Jets' record on the road in Giants Stadium was, when they were in Giants Stadium, was better than when they were supposed to be at home. You look at Aussie rules, and you look at the Melbourne teams who all share the stadiums. It went from when they all come together in about 1998, 1999, all the way through to a couple of years ago when Hawthorn won the grand final. The Melbourne teams had lost. It's a dangerous game for Everton to share a stadium, because I know, like, Evertonians don't want to hear it, but they are the second team in the city.
If I can just jump in there 1 second, because you did touch upon my city, Milan, for a minute there. Some people think that actually never getting relegated, and maybe some Evertonians might agree with me, is a more impressive feat than winning a European Cup.
Bare minimum.
And I might add that Inter have won more European Cups than Manchester United, or as many.
But there's an argument. But you understand that. I think you'd agree that Inter had an inferiority complex in the same stadium.
I generally don't believe it was because of the stadium, because I think historically Inter, AC Milan have had two great periods where they won most of their titles. Inter have consistently been good. Inter have the same size fan base. Inter have won as many league titles. So I don't think that's the case. But I do agree with you. I think around the world, every other city, which is two major clubs, with the exception of Glasgow, generally you have one that's plays second banana to the other. And I think that is an issue.
When I was a kid, my dad dropped me on my head when I was a baby. And I ended up supporting Liverpool. Now, when I was a kid, Everton were the biggest club.
Yeah.
So don't go biggest club, because times can change. Mm. Times can change. So at the moment, yeah. But in terms of tradition and history, there's an argument. Well, certainly from the blue side.
They were the Mersey millionaires, weren't
they? You've had your say. Let me have mine.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
No, well, you're right. So and all that, and Manchester United, we had a chat before, didn't we, Gavin? You said Manchester United, the most successful team in Britain, didn't
he? I didn't say that. I didn't say I said the biggest.
Well, the biggest, but they weren't when?
Yeah, they were relegated, right, when you were a kid?
Correct, when I was a lad. So, times change in football. Times change all the time, and you've got to get with it. Times change, both need new stadiums, and the president has said is that, I can remember, well, I can't remember, but long time ago, Anfield was Everton's ground, till he had an argument with the landlord. So there's a president there. So it's time to get rid of the small-mindedness. The two great, great football clubs in world football, get a new stadium at Stanley Park and get on with it.
Peter, you just used the words there, two great football clubs, and that's what they are. And the two great and distinct football clubs with two distinct reps. I just don't see how you put them together. And I think it's also, we're in this situation now because for 20, 30, 40 years and longer, the owners of the football clubs haven't had the vision to develop when they should have done. Right. And you're now in that situation where Anfield and Goodison aren't fit for purpose. Correct. And it's the failings of the past. But I think both Liverpool and Everton, if they cannot develop their own stadiums, I don't see what hope that gives for football.
I think there's great hope for football, because I was a player in the 80s when a few disasters happened, which we all know about, and it was tragedies. And the way them two football clubs come together, you don't tell me that they can't share a stadium, because I ain't having it. Because what them two football clubs have done through tragedies has been fantastic. And from a commercial point of view, you can have the Shankly Gate, you can have the Hillsborough Memorial, the Dixie Dean. The two stadiums, like the Allianz, could be blue one week, red the others. Offices one side, offers the other side, both sides of the park, where the old grounds were. Come into the 21st century, lads, in my opinion.
We're going to take a little quick poll on this in a minute, but I think Peter touched upon something there that's important in this day and age, the commercial side of it. I mean, as an outsider, comes from a city with shared stadiums, in fact, a whole country full of shared stadiums. I don't quite get this. I think teams can build their own history in their own stadiums, especially if you're going to go and build a new stadium for yourself. Tony, I'm assuming people have done viability studies and whatever else about what revenues can be generated. Some might say that it's almost a little bit depressing that we have to talk about it in this vein, but we're in an era of financial fair play. And what Peter said before about clubs coming and going, it's not entirely clear that that's going to happen now that financial fair play is here, and certain bigger clubs with more revenue will always be able to outspend others.
But this goes back to, this was first moved to things in 1967. Peter Robinson talked about building shared stadium, things on the Ainsley Racecourse site or in that vicinity. And there was no interest in it. And that's the biggest thing, that for whatever the bean counters say, for whatever the financial common sense, if people's emotion isn't taken by it, and this is a city where people are passionate about the football, they don't just turn up on a match day with a £50 ticket and go and watch Liverpool or Everton and go home. This is people's absolute lives. In other cities where you mightn't get that centre field, and I don't know because I haven't lived anywhere else, you may be able to do it, but this is Liverpool and Everton. These are two clubs with absolute distinct identities, who whatever they can share in certain instances, but long term it doesn't work. And if you spoke to the biggest problem, if you speak to Liverpool's owners, they will tell you they know it can't happen because Liverpool supporters just aren't interested.
But they've also got another point of view. Their view is that as
as a percentage of your overall income, match day income is shrinking with the new television deals. We've seen the Champions deal, which is like about nearly three times the previous Champions League one. The next Premier League television league television deal, I believe, will be in the region of 15 billion, which is, you know, sort of around three times the one that exists now. And what they're saying is that match day income is becoming less important to the football club than it was before. The Liverpool owners' point of view is that if this situation would have been the same decades ago, Arsenal wouldn't have moved from Highbury. And so they think that they need to revamp Anfield and keep it in its state of in a state where it's how can I put it, what traditional state, where it feels like the Anfield of the past and the whole sense of history. And they're very, very keen on that. A shared stadium won't happen.
Peter, we know your views on the shared stadium. Do you? But you know, you're also from here. Do you share Tony's view that Tony Barrett's view that that people just won't go for it?
No, I think it won't happen. I think there's an arrogance about it, which I don't like, and it just baffles me. I can't understand it. Can't understand the logic at all. It's quite sad, really, from my point of view.
But how would it work, Peter? Because obviously Liverpool are now looking to build a 60,000 stadium. Would Everton then have a 60,000 stadium? Is that, do you know what I mean? It's all those kind of things.
How it works is that you share a stadium. If Everton don't get 60,000, you don't get.
But I think that would become a problem for Everton, an increasing problem. I think it's fine if it sells out. Well, but I think if you've got 40,000 or 20,000, it's a third.
You might have a thing where Everton fix the prices a little bit lower than Liverpool. Yeah. It's commercial ways of getting doing it. And if I want to take my kids to watch a game, which I think football clubs with the revenue they get from TV, I think the prices are absolutely extortionate now. Yeah. Absolutely extortionate. And they're trying to price the ordinary punter out of it. The ordinary supporter. And I think it's scandalous. I do think it's scandalous, and I don't care about commercial aspects with the money they're getting off TV. I think you've got to give the supporters a break, because, and I know you go on about the American owners, football fans own football clubs. And I'm a romantic, and I'm proud of being a romantic about it, and I always will be. And that's passion for the city.
I'm totally with Peter on this one, and to the point that Tony Evans made about the TV revenues increasing. I've seen firsthand, and you know, Serie A has the second highest TV revenues in the world. We've had them for years. We still do. It's a very unhealthy business model, and what Peter said, I think, is absolutely sacrosanct about.
Go back to 1990. Berlusconi was talking about, because of TV revenue, letting fans in for free to provide atmosphere. And I think there's, you know...
You're talking about cross-subsidies.
Yeah. People, I think Richard Scudamore is seen as the great devil, you know, the Premier League, you know, the axis of evil and all that. It wouldn't surprise me if in the next television deal there is a certain amount of money ring-fenced to reduce... prices to go into the ground.
Well, some of us have argued that for a long time.
And
I think if we had a scenario where there was a shared 60,000 seat stadium, and maybe, you know, Liverpool could easily sell out two or three times over, and you could sell those 80 quid tickets to the Norwegians who come here, then, and Everton had to price their tickets at 10 quid so people could bring their kids, that would be an investment in the future.
It's a fact of life. When I played for Bolton Wanderers as a kid, it was cheaper to go and watch Manchester United play at Old Trafford than it was for Bolton Wanderers fans to go into Bendon Park. So Manchester United grew on that. Of course, we know Manchester United had some, I shouldn't say that, and Liverpool should, had some great players, you know what I mean, and generated that. But that's one of the reasons, because it was cheap football there.
All right, well, we're going to get you a question. We just want a quick show of hands. Who's in favour of a ground share?
Well,
all right. Who's against the ground share? All right. I think
Is your assessment was correct, Tony? Please.
Hello, my name's Tony. I'm a Man United supporter. We should have been in Manchester tonight to do a question answering with Greg Dyke, who's in Manchester tonight, but we decided to come here instead. And we came.
We're more powerful than Greg Dyke. We are the fourth estate.
We came here last year to a presentation with some journalists about how fans are treated in football, and you've touched on it tonight. The thing that drives the ground sharing and everything else that goes with it is the money. And the clubs and the FA and everybody have got no consideration to us as fans at all, and it's got to change. And what drives the ground sharing, again, is money. It's not convenience and all that sort of thing. Don't forget emotion, Peter. We've got our heritage at each club and what have you. Now, yeah, there may be a financial sort of sense for it at Bristol City and Bristol Rovers where they are struggling for finances and whatever. But at the end of the day, it's all driven by money. And we are being taken the mickey out of as fans by all the clubs. Man United, Everton, Liverpool, Arsenal, they're all doing it. And in terms of joint stadiums, it's driven by the commerciality of it, not thinking about the fans at all.
So Sunderland was driven by money. Or Roker Park wasn't good enough. Main Road wasn't good enough. That's why they moved. I'm saying that's for the good of the fans.
Yeah, but
that's for the good of the fans. Why Sunderland went in the stadium alight.
Look how much Arsenal charged for tickets.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tickets now. Look at the increase in tickets from what, 5 years ago to now. The percentage increase is absolutely phenomenal. Now, in terms of developing their own stadium,
it's still a hybrid because of the attendance would be more.
Building your new ground is fair enough, but you've still got your own identity, your own culture. Ground sharing is totally different.
Ground sharing is, but you still got your team. I mean, Everton, for heaven's sake, used to play at Anfield. I've mentioned that.
That was a long time ago.
But in 200 years' time, when they're having a chat about it, they'll go away.
But it doesn't get away from the point that ground sharing or not, it's all driven by commerciality and not thinking of the fans.
Because the point that Sunderland left Roker Park for the good of the fans, to build a new stadium.
Yeah, to build a new stadium individually for that team, but not to ground share.
Right, but I think the reality, though, is that, you lump sort of United and Everton together. United and Arsenal are money-making machines. Everton, correct me if I'm wrong here, lose money every year. And my opinion as an outside observer, it's down to the two managers that they've had the last seven or eight years.
No. Everton shouldn't lose money. Everton is probably the most badly run club in the Premier League over a period, well, since the Bill Kenwright era began. And I'll get a legal letter for this.
Any lawyers in the room tonight?
Do you like to sue me?
Any snitches?
Right. Everton have made very, very bad choices financially, which have hamstrung them. Everton make enough money, or should make enough money, to be doing well, but they've done some very, very silly things. And I expect...
For instance,
the Prudential loan, where they took out over 25 years, 30 million loan, which in the end they'll have to pay 62 million back over.
That sort of a mortgage. Yeah. Which a lot of football clubs would
not like that. The fact that they couldn't raise, at the same time they took themselves, they couldn't raise 30 million to get themselves into the King's Dock. Can you imagine if Everton would have had a stadium in the King's Dock? They would have owned the city centre. It's like, that was the opportunity for Everton to become the club of Liverpool, to become the club of the city centre. Well, all the ale houses would have been blue because, you know, they would have brought in. It was a bad mistake. The kit bag deal. Whoa, what's going on there with Junk and Nike? Seriously, Everton's finances have been appallingly run. And as I say, there's a legal letter in the post. But Everton's problems are largely self-inflicted. I mean, great club. And you know what? I'm not one of these Liverpool fans who hates Everton. You know, I grew up that, you know, we you know, they weren't the enemy. United were the enemy. And I'd love to see Everton do well, not as well as us. But it's the financial situation. It's nothing to do with the managers.
Oh, well, whether the wounds are self-inflicted or not, Tony, I might argue, though, that the accounts are there for all to see. And the fact is they have lost money and that money is gone. And, you know, I think football in general could do with a hell of a lot more transparency than we have now.
Did Liverpool lose money last year?
Every year.
Right.
I thought so.
I think the...
There is another thing here, right?
Yeah. I think Liverpool's owners, though, are slightly more liquid. I mean, sorry, but just on those Everton points, I can't let you go on this. Because it's surreal to have a football club in the Premier League with a guy, a theatre guy, who all he does is talk about how he doesn't have any money and how poor he is and how he's not a wealthy man. Well, what I find very strange.
Well,
you don't hear...
I'll tell you what. Let's be absolutely frank and honest about it. Football clubs all lose money. Right. Here's the reality. They make money. It's the only business you can asset strip on an annual basis and still, like, people come back for more. Football clubs don't lose money. If they lost money, they'd all go under. It's a load of bollocks.
All right. I really hope there are no snitchers here.
So Everton make money then? You just said they made some ridiculous financial decisions.
They have made a lot of bad decisions. Right. Everton should be making money. Everton should be in profit. Right. They've made bad decisions. But on a general basis, people milk money out of football. Right. They blame the players' wages, which is not true. And people make loads of money out.
Plymouth Argyle, who nearly went into liquidation. In fact, I paid the players' wages some digs money in Lenton's. I was at Leeds United when it went belly up financially, 100 million to bondholders.
After living the dream.
Yeah. So these football clubs, Coventry was our coach. By the way, I've managed some great clubs.
Don't get Peter the either job with things.
No wonder I won the grounds here. So something must have happened to them football clubs that I was missing.
Yeah, but Peter, you didn't have control over the finances.
No, but what I'm saying, you just made a comment there that football clubs all make money. Now, there's one that nearly went to the wall, Plymouth. There's one, Leeds United, took a terrible, terrible hit. There's one, Coventry City. Now, I'm playing in the City. So someone must have had a right few quid out of that and not told anyone else about it.
Well, you know what? We did a series on it a while back. And what we did, we went to the...
So Coventry made money. Like, where did it go?
I think what you're saying, and I don't want to put words in your point, Tony, but what you're saying is the people behind the club and some of the decision makers at the club can make money over time.
Yeah.
Even if the club itself does badly.
Just to give the example of the last few days, Liverpool lose £50 million. That's fine, Liverpool lose £50 million, but if the owners sold Liverpool tomorrow, they would make a profit on what they put into the club.
Or if they sold
Luis Suarez. They could service the debts, what you're saying.
Right. Yeah.
Like most businesses do. But I'm on about these other clubs, which didn't.
I guess what we're driving at is the idea...
Glasgow Rangers.
Yeah. They should be making loads. That's the perfect example of people, like, I won't say stealing, Because, you know, it's but people taking money out the club when and not reinvesting it. And
it's impossible for Rangers to go bust.
Yeah.
It's impossible. Strange things have happened.
So forgive me. Some strange things. Them things that happens at Leeds United, Coventry and Plymouth. What? I was making up.
No, Peter. It's not you that's doing it. But Peter, funnily enough, we did a series.
By the way, and I know, it's people making bad decisions, because let's put it into basics. If I go to the ice cream van with a fiver, I can't get a tenner's worth of ice cream.
But Peter, we
you haven't been back to Ireland for years, have you?
Yeah. But that's what some people have done. Our football clubs as businesses,
but
which is ridiculous.
We did a series on nearly 10 years ago about how to take money out of clubs, and we talked to the Football League and in the Premier League, and like there's loads of examples. Like one club in one of the lower leagues, all the directors were like they were ordering champagne and booze on the club, and it was getting loaded into the back of the cars and taking it away, and they were pointing the finger at like the players. Player wages is ruining the club, and there are loads of ways.
So which club was this then?
I don't want another legal letter. I get enough of them.
Just to go back. Sure, you can't have a legal letter.
Just go back to the point that our Mancunian friend made, is that clubs should stand and fall on their own identities, on their own abilities to survive and thrive as football clubs. You shouldn't look for amalgamations. You shouldn't look for ground shares. Where does that end? There's talk of Liverpool and Manchester economically as cities becoming some sort of, I don't know, economic conurbation where we share our... I don't get it. Liverpool and Manchester are rival cities. They can come together where needs be. And that's how it should be in football. Liverpool and Everton have been separate entities for over 100 years, two of the greatest clubs in European football, and people want to force them together in one stadium.
No, they still have the separate identities.
They don't, though, Peter.
I'm
really interested in this, because your identity comes from a stadium, Tony.
When Liverpool go away from home, it becomes somebody else?
No, but if you go to Europe and ask people in Europe what they know about Liverpool, the first things the Cop and Anfield. Well, Jose Mourinho, the power of Anfield Road.
Right, enough of Jose Mourinho. Through the evening without mentioning him. But I don't know. I think that's one of the great things about football. Right? To me, a club is a crest and some colors and nothing else. The people running it, the owner who put the money in, the place where you play. If the club goes somewhere else, the club is still there. It's a state of mind.
Milton Keynes Dons?
Sorry?
Milton Keynes Dons.
Well, that, I mean, obviously that became a different club. They changed the crest, they changed the colors. I mean, and I think most people would probably agree that that was wrong. But I don't know. I become very uncomfortable when clubs become identified with people or with physical objects who can change. We have a question here.
Yeah, I'm Matt. I'm a big blue for Peter. I've been to the Allianz Arena and watched 1860.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere there is okay, but I'd say it's pretty on the poor side. Whereas if you go to a Bayern Munich game, it's going to be immense. Mm. And what you said before, Peter, was at Liverpool-Everton share, if it was a 60,000-70,000 stadium, unfortunately, as a blue, I'd have to say Liverpool probably would fill it. And Everton had, struggle with...
Price the tickets, right?
We might be 20,000 short.
No, what I'm saying, and you don't know till you go in, if Liverpool are, just for average sake, charging a tenner, charge a fiver.
But I think Everton do charge a tenner a lot of the time, 20 quid.
If you give kids a chance to go to football matches and it's cheaper than the others...
I've got sympathy with that. I've got a lot of mates who Liverpool supporters who actually take their kids to Everton because the kids can go and watch the match there. And that's not the same at Liverpool, and I think that's one of Everton's biggest advantages in this city.
I'll tell you the true story about this city. I played in the derby game and after about 20 minutes, am I allowed to swear on this?
Yeah.
As long as no snitches here, that's fine.
All right. So, they're Gillespie and Anson playing at the back and then playing, and we're trying to squeeze him. Barnsley, clever. He's on the left wing and kept coming in the hole. Couldn't get near him. And anyhow, I'm getting frustrated. So anyhow, one bounce is just on the halfway line by the dugouts. Well, I catch him, don't I? I smash him. And he rolls over into the dirt. It looks... And all of the puddlings, you blue nose bastard, you effing big eared soul. And I've gone, Uncle Arthur, sit down. It was my mum's brother, my Uncle Arthur, who had season tickets. He had season tickets at Anfield. The family still got them now. God rest his soul, he's gone now. And I got him tickets for the players' lounge after the game. I said, what is your game? He went, I've gone, didn't I? I went.
something that shouldn't be forgotten, by the way.
That's the city.
The biggest attendance that was ever in this city was at Goodison Park when they lost 70,000 for Derby. There are a lot of Everton supporters. We never know what the split is in the city. Everyone likes to look at it different ways. But I just wonder, I'm at Goodison Park as often as Peter is, and I just wonder whether Everton would fill a 60,000 stadium. I wonder what the impact would be.
I wonder whether Liverpool would fill it.
Well, yeah.
Right. When things are going well.
It says England here on my running order. I imagine you guys are all England fans and support England ahead of Liverpool. But judging from the hands up, unless there's major complaints, we can leave England till a little bit later because there's questions here in the audience.
Hi, yeah, just a quick question, really, or it's an observation, really. If you're an Evertonian and you're an Evertonian season ticket, every season for the last couple of seasons, what you actually give all the season ticket holders is three valid vouchers for three adults, three lots of tickets for two lots of children. Children can go to see Everton for the SEA Games for £5. Adult can go for £15. So you can actually go to Everton, take two children and an adult for £25. And getting back to what you said before about Tony, I agree. There's more and more some Liverpool fans. If you want to take the kid to see a Premier League, whether it's going to be one of the lower teams in the Premiership, you've got 10 times more of a chance to go to bloody Goodison. Okay, they can't fill the ground, but they've got the opportunity to go and see Everton on a Premier League team. Now, if you're a Liverpool fan, God help you trying to get kids a ticket. My mate here, Jimmy, he's a mad Liverpool fan. Oh, just saying, his son is a Liverpool fan. And plus, he can't get tickets to take his lad.
Jimmy, you weren't sitting next to me. I said, you weren't sitting next to me.
Can I declare an interest here? That's John Chesko, who has been lived in Venmore Street, just by Anfield, and has been my friend for, too many years.
35 years.
35 years. Now, well, I will say about him, he was everywhere. He was a great story about him. Italian family. He went to Rome with his cousins, and they got in like 4 hours before the game because his Italian cousins forced him to. So for like 3 hours, every flare in the ground, the Roma fans were firing at him. Was it them? Three of them. But the point I'm going to make is, he's let his child grow up to be an Evertonian, and that makes him a bad father.
It does. And I've got to be honest with you, Tony, you're a bad lad. Blow me up. Now, me missus is an Evertonian. I just want to be, you know, what can you say? But anyway, getting back to the Roma game, Tony, we had good times, didn't we, mate?
We had great times.
We certainly did.
Pass the mic on.
Thanks, guys.
Hi there. Dave, Liverpool fan. Just wanted to mention, first of all, about owners making money from football clubs. I'm surprised none of you mentioned Manchester United as the best example of owners who are making money from football clubs. But going back to Liverpool and Everton ground sharing, one of the things you haven't touched on, Peter mentioned about the Allianz Arena. You're looking at the cost of a football stadium. Everton couldn't afford the Kirby redevelopment, well, the Kirby development and the King's Dock development. If you're looking around to do an Allianz development in Liverpool, you're probably looking at in the region of what the Stanley Park Stadium was supposed to cost, which was, £250-260 million. I can't for the life of me, so I mean, I'm vehemently against a ground share anyway, but where are Everton going to get £130 million from?
I think those who would...
Sorry, just about... Because you mentioned the Allianz, just to clarify this and to support your point, as you may have heard, 1860 Munich couldn't eventually afford it either. Bayern ended up buying them out, and they're in a very bad situation. You might also make the point 1860 are a lot smaller than Everton, even in relation to Bayern. But
the two scenarios that are being put forward for Ground Sharing and Everton making it viable is that, one, Everton would rent from Liverpool, which I just think, the minute you do that, you destroy Everton Football Club. Mm. I think if Everton went back to the situation in 1892 of being basically at the whim of a landlord, and if that landlord is Liverpool Football Club, I can't think of a worse scenario for Everton than that. The other one that's being put forward is that the City Council would fund it and Liverpool and Everton would pay them rent. Now, 10, 15 years ago, when Liverpool was booming and the building industry's really raging in town, that may be impossible then. Liverpool City Council set a budget last night, which is basically there's £162 million cuts in the city. Those cuts are going to mean that libraries close, that children's services get absolutely hammered. Everywhere across the board where the city needs help, it's losing help. If anyone thinks that Liverpool City Council is in a position to fund the building of a stadium, they're living in a world that doesn't exist. And I just look at all the possible scenarios that could lead to a ground share, and there isn't one there. And that is my biggest worry of all. Liverpool will survive because they've got this global fan base. Liverpool can do that. Everton don't have that, and I think that's the biggest worry of all. And I know Liverpool supporters like to pretend that they like to see Everton go to the wall. No one in the city should want that. That would be a disaster for the city.
Two teams, and like, you know, it's a... I remember the famous Wimbledon game. You know, it's like, and you know, you think to yourself, oh, great, they're going down. And then you think about the enormity of what would happen. This city needs two top-flight teams, and it needs Everton to be successful. And I hope they are relatively successful, just not as successful as us.
For me, the starting point for stadium share is if someone comes up with a viable financial argument as to how it can happen.
And the Liverpool owners are not interested in that. They are absolutely not interested in it. You can wipe it from like your thought process. And anything Christian Perslow says, just go the opposite way.
Well, I think Liverpool change their owners quite often, don't they, in relative terms? And I take your point about the financial situation at the moment, but you think Britain's going to be in this financial situation in 10, 20 years' time? Financial situations change. So, like, I take your point. It's more important.
Well, Peter, during the boom, that was the King's Dock time.
What I'm saying is, so whatever argument you put them through financials, just don't say it because of the way it is financially now. It could change in 10 years' time where there's a change in the economy and the council want to do it. I don't mind if
the ground share, like, in 20 years' time, I'll be dead.
All right. There you go.
All right, so
we're roughly halfway through. We're going to take a little break now. In the second part, we'll talk England, since you're all big England fans. And maybe a little bit of Liverpool, if time allows, and we'll take loads of questions. Grab yourself a drink, relax, and we'll be back in a few.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.